Hey friends, as a church leader, you know that your ability to execute your vision comes down to staffing, facilities, and programming. All three of those things are fueled by one thing. That is generosity. Generosity is the fuel that drives your ministry engine. We are always trying to learn how to grow and create cultures of generosity that help fuel the vision. I want to introduce you to my friends over at The Giving Church, a brand new sponsor here at Unseminary, and they really do want to help. I love these guys, and you should lean in with them. Visit thegivingchurch.com/unseminary for a free PDF. It's 5 ways to grow your church giving. The Giving Church, led by generosity coach, founder, and just amazing guy, Phil Ling, has worked with nearly 1,000 churches of all sizes, including the size of your church, in 40 different denominations and raised over $1 billion to fuel incredible ministry. Don't run out of fuel for your ministry. Visit thegivingchurch.com/unseminary today for your free PDF, 5 ways to grow your church giving. Again, that's thegivingchurch.com/unseminary today.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to inform and inspire your leadership? Do you have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of other leaders in pursuit of stuff you wish they taught in seminary. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast, presented by CDF Capital, helping churches grow. Visit them at cdf.capital/unseminary.
Well, hey friends, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. So glad that you have decided to tune in. Really looking forward to today's conversation. You know, every week we bring you a leader who will both inspire and equip you. And I got to be honest, friends, most of the people I don't know, or I get a chance to meet them through the podcast. But today, that's not the case. Excited to have a friend and church leader that, you know, we've got a chance to know each other over these last number of years. Travis Spencer is at the Fields Church. This is a fantastic church in Mattoon, Illinois, in Coles County, which is in central Illinois. And they have two locations. Travis is the lead pastor. This church is started over 100 years ago, if I'm doing my math right. And this is a great church. You're going to want to get to know them. Travis, so glad that you're here. Today, we're talking about a book that he recently released. This caught my attention, and I want to bring that to you. Travis, welcome to the show.
Rich, thanks so much. What an honor. I love our friendship, and I love how you have impacted my life over the last couple of years. So thanks so much.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Super, super great to have you on. So, love this. Why don't we start? Tell us a little bit about the Fields. Kind of fill out the. Well, I'm gonna first before you do that. I'm gonna tell you. I've said this to you in other contexts. I had a chance to visit. I've been at your location a couple times, and I had this funny thing happen when I pulled into your parking lot. You know, I thought like, oh, you know, so many churches they have like these fun names, and the Fields is a great fun name, and it's, you know, it's like Impact Church or, you know, and they're like these great metaphors. And I assumed that the Fields was like a metaphor, like it's a metaphor for, you know, the field, the harvest is plenty and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then I distinctly remember pulling into the parking lot and I'm like, oh no, there's cornfields right there. This is the Fields Church. So tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, we have dual purpose identity. So you are right on the spiritual side. It's like, yes, the fields are reaped with harvest. However, we are right smack dab in the middle of an agricultural area of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And so there are fields around us. And so it makes great sense. And it identifies with our community. It helps people understand there's purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about new life all the time and being life-giving. And I tell people, I tell our team, like, listen, like the fields are out there. The people are out there. And we need to help them understand a life-giving relationship with Jesus. And yeah, so our locations, and we're continuing to grow. And as you know, we're expanding in some additional locations. And mm-hmm. I have a feeling they're all going to be in Fields.
The brand will stretch.
Yeah, I think rural ministry is going to be our niche.
Yeah, it's cool. I love it. I think that's great. The thing, I don't know how to say this. So this is the problem. I'm like a guy from the suburbs, spent most of my time in the suburbs, and I don't want this to sound demeaning, because it's not at all. You know that I respect you and respect your ministry, but like your church to me doesn't feel like when I've been to services, it's like not what I would think my assumption of like rural ministry would look like. Like it feels very much like, hey, if I was, you know, obviously you guys are a growing church, but talk us through that a little bit. Like what is the experience of showing? You have a beautiful, like your physical locations are amazing. Talk us through what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really matter where you plop a building down. It's figuring out what people need and what they're looking for. And when you start learning and learning what other good, healthy, growing churches are doing, you just take notes. And I don't think it matters if you're rural or urban or, you know, in the suburbs. It's, you know, people want quality. People want to identify with, hey, when I walk into this building, it feels like me. It feels like something I see in culture, I see on TV. And so I think you actually have to stretch to like what the culture is needing, not, well, this is where God's put me, so I guess I'll just, you know, have some dumpy little building. We try very hard at being a church that we are over 100 years old, and most people would think we're less than 5 years old just because the look, the feel, the vibe. We're very intentional in that.
Yeah. That's cool. That's good. Well, you've written a book recently, and I want to make sure we dive into that, get a chance to learn. It's called Wonderful: How to Live a Fulfilled Life in a Very Full World. And I want to hear all about this. People are living, you know, it doesn't matter their context. I you know, one of the things, one of the joys that I have in my life is interacting with church leaders across the country and getting a chance to visit lots of parts of the country. And everywhere I go, people are like, well, you know, people in this part of the country, they're really busy. They're, you know, they got lots going on. They got tons in their schedule. But you know, we're trying to help people not just live, you know, not just thrive or not just survive, but to thrive. It's like a universal problem everywhere we go, and it literally doesn't matter. I nod politely and say like, oh, I totally get that. I can understand why your part of the country is so different than the rest of the country. But it's true. It's universal. Talk to me about that. What kind of led you to think, oh, this is a problem that I want to tackle in written form?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm entering my 25th year of ministry. So I didn't to say that. So love 25 it. Years of ministry, and that's not just church ministry. I was a university football chaplain for about 7 years, and then I'm very involved in the community on boards, and just I'm a huge believer in community advocacy. And so what you do over 25 years is you're just with people all the time. And it's not just church people. You know, it's not just people sitting in pews and rows. It's like around boardrooms, it's in on football fields, it's coaches, it's all these things. And I've discovered it's very easy to feel empty when your plate is full. That clash of how can I be empty yet I feel so full, but they're full of is they're bloated. I tell a story in the book. It's like, I distinctly remember being on a cruise boat with my family, and, my son gets up and goes, you know, we're sitting around the pool floating in the Caribbean going, oh, this is great. He gets up I go, hey, where are you going, Dakota? And he goes, I'm going to get a shrimp burrito. I'm like, oh my goodness, we're still eating. And then I say, oh, pick me up a taco on the way back. You know, but there's that feeling that you, at some point in that trip, you always feel kind of gross and full and bloated. And I think that's life, because everything is available. It's available all the time. Your calendar can be over full. You can say yes to everything. And so instead of us as humans having a stomach ache, I think we have a life ache. I think we're like, wow, why don't I feel good? Why do I feel bloated and full? And it's because we're putting all the wrong things in our life. And to be honest, we're chasing something and it's not leading to fulfillment or satisfaction. And I do think that's a human problem. I don't think that is where you live in the United States. Like that's right. That is everyone's identifying with that is I want to feel fulfilled. I want to feel satisfied, but I feel like everything I'm chasing for is not leading me to that. And so as a pastor, I was like, okay, like we have to help solve this problem.
We got to talk about this. Totally. Yeah. Let's stick there for a little bit. I don't love that idea of the life ache, but I love that. You know, that concept, I think that resonates deeply, you know, this idea of we're overfull, we're stuffed. Our culture is, you know, time and again, it's like we all individually are living the lives that for most of human history, you know, only kings lived. You know, like we have instant access to food, instant access to, we snap our fingers and entertainment comes to us. You know, we're not built for that. Like we're not built for, you know, this kind of constant consumption, constant. In your own ministry, how have you seen that work its way, that kind of like, you know, people who are full but feel empty? Talk to me about that. How do you see that as a pastor in the people you lead over the years?
Yeah, I asked a lot of people that question of like, I try to drill down into that. Like, yep. What's the real cause? And it seemed like after the literally hundreds of conversations, interviews, I have a journalism background, so I kind of mm-hmm. like digging into this, and I interviewed mm-hmm. and asked a ton of questions. And it seemed like there was three areas that we had this life ache in, and we needed to find this fulfillment. And it was personal soul care. It was relationships, the people in our life, and it was the purpose of why we're alive. So to boil that down, and the book kind of wraps around these three big lanes, is personal care, personal soul care, people, and purpose. Mm-hmm. Because hundreds of conversations, I like looked at all of the trends, and it seemed like they all fell in one of those three buckets. Mm. And I actually asked the question, not why do you feel gross, but what fulfills you? What makes you feel good? Mm-hmm. And their answers fell in one of those buckets. It was, well, when I go to church and I have a, you know, during worship. Okay, well, that's mm-hmm. a spiritual thing. Or mm-hmm. when I'm around my kids, or, you know, when we go to, you know, so there was a people thing. And then it was, well, I love, you know, helping. When I went on that missions trip, when I did something mm-hmm. that was good. And mm-hmm. so it really was, it's either like soul care, or personal care, people, or purpose. And then, so then mm-hmm. it's like, I think that we are filling our lives with those things, but they're still unhealthy.
Mm. Okay. Well, let's dig into those a little bit. Was there, as you're writing this, I know for me, as I've written in the past, there's a part of it where, I feel like I'm writing for myself. It's like the most convicting, the part that kind of points at me. Was there any of those three, one of those three, or a part of one of those three, whether it's, you know, wonderful life, wonderful people, wonderful purpose, that was particularly kind of self-diagnosing and like self, you know, convicting as you were wrestling through it?
Oh, all three, because I think that's what made the book so easy to write, is I have personal stories in every single one of those categories. And it's just so easy to identify that, my goodness, like I've not taken care of myself or my soul in the right way. And here I am as a pastor, I have this spiritual title, and yet we can feel very depleted spiritually. Right. And, you know, I think we all have gauges and dashboards in our own life. Mm-hmm. And I told the story that my son one time, his name was mentioned on the local police scanner because he ran out of gas. And our names were mentioned on the police scanner too, which is not good when you live in these rural areas. Everyone knows about
him. He's on Travis's kid.
Yeah. So he's on the way to work, or he's on the way to a class at the local hospital on one of our busiest highways. He runs out of gas. He pulls his car over, but doesn't get it all the way over. So now over the police scanner is the vehicle owned by Travis Spencer is, you know, blocking traffic, and blah, you know, and so we do the whole, son, you gotta, you know, put gas in your tank. But if he would have just looked at the dashboard and looked at the gauge, he would have known, like, hey, I can't get all the way to my job today. And I think if we would take a look at our gauges and go, man, I don't know if I'm filling up in God's word. I don't know if I'm spending some, I don't know if there's solitude. I don't know if there's rest. I don't know if I have enough rest. Mm-hmm. Why is there burnout in my life? Mm-hmm. And so I really think we have to look at the gauges, and I have plenty of personal diagnosis there. I'm like, wow, I think I ran on empty way too much.
You know? Right. Yeah.
And so that would be one of those personal care kind of stories.
Yeah. So when you, so I think it's interesting that the way the book is structured, I've got it open. I'm looking at the table of contents. It's interesting. You go from that kind of, personal soul care, people, to purpose. And I wonder if particularly church leaders, obviously there's a lot of church leaders listening in today, if we go the other way around, it's like we start with purpose, like what the thing that motivates us is the mission. We think about the thing we wake up in the morning. It's a noble thing. We wake up in the morning and we think about lost people in our communities, but then we end up, soul care can feel like, well, yeah, I'll get to that. That feels like that's like a nice to have, or like, that's like when I slow down, I'll get to those things. Did you order that in this direction, you know, on purpose? And, you know, what kind of coaching would you give to us for folks that are in, you know, are in ministry, that we do this for, you know, our jobs? We spend our days thinking about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I ordered it in purpose. I don't know if you've ever read like Dallas Willard, but soul care, if you don't take care of your own soul, like that's the foundation of who we are.
Yep.
And so if you're on an airplane, you were on an airplane yesterday. When we're on an airplane, everyone hears the little, hey, if cabin pressure goes down, the oxygen masks, you know, fall down. And then it says, if you have a child sitting next to you, make sure you put your mask on first.
Right.
Before you put the mask of the child next to you. And like, what parent is, or what pastor is going to go, oh, I need to take care of me before I need to take care of the people who are in my community that are dying. Mm. And so we immediately start putting the masks on other people, and we're saying, hey, I want to help that person. I want to help that person. I want to help that person. And the whole time we have not put the mask on ourselves. The oxygen is not on in our own lives. And so again, we have to fill up our own lives with God before we can ever try to help someone else. And we mess that up all the time.
I was going to say, so I know. So like, so to help us, pastor us here as pastors, why, how do we get around that? Like it feels like, well, it's like why Dallas Willard exists, because he's pointing out an issue that we seem to get wrong. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only one who's listening in, but it's like the, you know, we go to putting the masks on other people first all the time. So, you know, coach us on that a little bit.
Yeah. Let's be raw here. Like we can measure church metrics.
Yep.
So I can work really hard and see church numbers go up. I can see groups go up. I can see people through the front door go up. I can see finances go up.
Yep.
And so we measure those numbers and we prioritize those numbers.
Yep.
And the dashboard that I talked about, like your gaslight of your soul, that's a harder number to measure.
Right.
And it's an easier number to hide.
Oh, that's
good. I think there's a lot of unhealthy pastors that are busting down, you know, the numbers are great in their churches, but how are they doing?
That's good.
But the problem is it catches up with you. It really does. Like we can play that game for, some people can do it for seasons or years.
Yeah. Decades.
But if you don't tackle soul care, I think it could be a house of cards.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and I was speaking to someone this week who we're going to have on a future episode, and we were talking about this exact issue. And I said, man, I'm just so tired of leaders who, and I think this is turning around, which is a good thing. But like there was a real period there where it was like every conference I went to, there would be some leader in some massive ministry who's making huge influence. And then they would get up and say, like, don't do it like me, though. Like, I built this thing and then burnt out. Like, I wish I hadn't have done that. And I'm like, where's the person that's like, you know, I've taken a measured life through my entire ministry and at the same time had huge impact. And there are those people out there. And I would count you as one of those that it's like, okay, there's a person who is actually trying to tend their own garden while worrying about, you know, the people around them. But it seems like we run into those all the time. I feel like it's getting better, but I feel like we still got so far to go on that front.
Yeah. It'd be interesting if as a leadership culture, we could always celebrating the churches that blow up and the pastors to go from this number to some great number, we could celebrate incremental growth.
Yes.
You know, like this pastor helped lead his church to a 7% growth for the last 20 years every year.
Yes.
Instead of they started in their living room with 12 people, and 3 years later they have an auditorium of 1,000. And we hear that all the time, but it's like, one, it's not very doable, and two, I don't know how you don't get burnt out in that. Like that's a story of complete exhaustion.
Yes. Well, and I love, so friends of mine in Omaha, Stonebridge Church, Mark Chitwood is the lead pastor there. And that's one of his jokes. Like they're a church of, they're a sizable church. They're south of 3,000. Like, they're probably 2,500 people, something like that. And his joke is, we're the slowest growing church in America, you know, but when you hear their story, they literally, it's like they've grown 10% a year for 30 years. Like, it's just like, you know, they, and that over time that has, and I'm like, that's what we want to do. Like, that is, you know, that's a whole other conversation, but you know, interesting, interesting stuff. Well, you know, I know that writing a book, this is a huge task, like actually sitting down, let's kind of flip and talk rather than about the content. Let's talk about the process. So what led you to be like, okay, we've got to, you know, now's the time. I want to write this. Had you been thinking about this for a while? Is this, you know, feel like every pastor I run into has got a book in them or thinking about it, but talk to us about that. Talk to us about that part.
Yeah, absolutely. If you would interview my wife, she would say, I have 100 books inside of me.
And, yes. Good.
And up until this time, I had zero on print. So,
yes, yes.
You know, I think it's, I'm one who is always thinking, dreaming. I do have a journalism background, so I mean, I enjoy writing. I enjoy mm-hmm. that. But this mm-hmm. really came down to, okay, 25 years of experience. If you were to just write one book,
right,
what's the easiest one? And then, right. Rich, you helped me. Like, you know, I want your listeners to hear this. Like, you said every lead pastor should write a book, and something inside of me said, okay, like I've been thinking about this. I've talked about it. I have a phone full of notes on it.
Yeah,
I have never sit down and did it. And then you actually helped set that plan and go like, okay, let's walk through
this.
Let's
do it. Let's talk about it.
Let's create an outline. And so really it was getting thoughts into an outline into, and then in that, and when I was in the outline process is when I started, okay, I know the direction of this book. I'm going to start talking to a lot of people and getting content from.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
From friends, family, Facebook, everything, and start asking. Like, I know I'm going to write on this, so now I want to hear stories from other people. I started cataloging in my own mind my own personal stories that would connect to some of these. But I also did an audit of people in my life and said, "This person." So there's a great lady in our church that's a comedian. But she became a comedian because her father passed away and she couldn't laugh for like a couple years. She was a very joyous lady. When her dad died, the laughter stopped.
Oh, wow.
And then she had this awakening that, no, God put this in me. I need to help people laugh. And I'm like, I want to retell that story in the chapter of purpose. Like, God's got that in you. So I was cataloging people that I know. We have some veterans in our church that I'm like have incredible stories of hard work and grit. I tell my own dad's story of he's a welder and just smelled like old iron, you know, when he came home from work. But grit, you know, and it's missing. And so working hard. And so I was looking at my life. I'm looking at other people's lives. And then you just have to start writing it. And to be honest, for me, I sat on my back patio for like a couple hours every night when it was nice out, the sun went down, the patio lights were on. I grabbed my laptop and I just spent a couple hours writing or researching. And it just actually was very enjoyable to me. Like it's nice out. I'm going to go sit on the back patio and I'm going to work on this thing.
Right.
And I thought if I could do 1 or 2 hours and just kind of keep plugging away at it. Now we had a deadline. So just a little bit, I used this book also to really catapult for a sermon series and to get back to church in January. So it was strategic. And because of that, that put another pressure on you have a real deadline. Like, it's not a, hey, I'm going to write a book in, you know, this calendar year.
Sometimes, it was like, yeah.
Like, we want to hand this book out in January. So then you had to go backwards and go, okay, so if we're distributing it here. So I did have, so that's why I was like, okay, 1 or 2 hours on my patio, I have to bust this out. But it wasn't exhausting. I tell people all the time, you know, Rich, you gave me a plan. You gave me some 4 or 5 simple steps. You opened the door into some relationships with editors, designers. You made it fairly simple. And I was like, it was much easier than I thought. And it really was. And if I learned anything, and people ask, what did you learn reading the book or writing a book? It was like, it was easier than I thought.
It's a little bit demystifying.
It's not this massive mountain.
Right.
You know, especially if you trust, you know, an editor to clean up your stuff. I think there's vulnerability in writing a book. Mm-hmm. You're like, good grief. Not only is everyone going to read it and you're going to look at your little Amazon stars and see if anybody commented, yeah. but you're also giving it to an editor that's doing a very deep dive and going, yes. I don't like this chapter, or I didn't yeah. like the way you said this. And I'm like, well, yes. That's my favorite story.
yeah, yeah. That's yeah, my son. And I want to tell that yeah. story about him on the car. That's a great story. You know, like yeah. Yeah, you get pushback. Yeah, for
you
sure.
You push past vulnerability. You push past the fear of it's impossible to do.
Yep.
And it's doable. You know, right. And I'm like, and I've already got the next one, like, you know, rolling. You know, I'm like, hey, I can do this.
Yeah, that's fun. I can identify that feeling for sure. I literally just came off the release of a book and I have that feeling of like, okay, let's get going on the next one. Like it, and you know, I want to use that because I know that wanes, like eventually you're like, okay, you know, you kind of lose that momentum, but I'm like, oh yeah, right. There are, you know, let's get working on this next one. Let's go back to the moment. So I appreciate the kind words and you know, that's nice of you to say that, but like in that same group that we were encouraging, there was, you know, 8 or 9 pastors in that room, or, you know, half a dozen churches. And you were the one that did it. I was challenging all of them. So if it's a measurement of coaching, I'm, you know, I'm batting 2 out of 10 or whatever, you know, 20%, something like that. What was it in that initial phase that you walked away saying, no, like, let's do this, like, let's actually, cause you know, if I look at that, and that's not a criticism to other people, actually one of the other churches is working on one as well. But one of them had already done it. So maybe I'm being self-critical. I shouldn't be, but put yourself in that headspace, and what was it that helped you actually get over the, like, okay, let's actually get the thing rolling. You know, kind of what gave you the internal drive to make the commitment to do it?
Yeah. One thing was, someone believes that I can do this. Mm-hmm. Like someone believes in me to write it. Mm-hmm. And then just some simple steps. I remember you, I think you, when you write your books, you speak it out a lot, right? You use like mm-hmm. some,
yep.
some yep. and so, and I was like, man, who can't talk for 30 or 45 minutes on something that's so passionate in your life?
Right.
So just get it out. Just get it out of you. And then you'll clean it up later.
Yep.
But just get it out of you. And I was like, so I was sitting in the room going, I have these thoughts. I have these, you know, I have these ideas. And then if you match that with people need this content.
Yeah. Yeah.
The why is very important. The why is not, I want to be an author.
Yep.
If you know, I want to be a, you know, church planting, same thing. I just want to have extra campuses. No, that's a horrible why. You know?
Yes.
Cause it takes work. So the why is I don't want my name on a book. That mm-hmm. can't be the why. And it can't mm-hmm. be, it has to be, I have a story to tell. I have content that can be valuable. I need mm-hmm. to deliver practical tools and steps into someone's mm-hmm. life to help them find fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you hold on to that and say, I actually believe I have something that's beneficial, and my audience usually is a Sunday morning and then some people yep. online, but mm-hmm. now this audience is like, goes beyond that. And it's really incredible.
Yeah, that's good. I want to underline what you said there just to encourage people that might be listening in. You know, if you have got something that will help your people, which I believe you do, like the most selfish thing you can do is to not do the work to release it. Like it's actually, it's a gift of compassion. I love Seth Godin's work on that. It's like it's an act of compassion to ultimately put this together and then to promote it, to try to get other people to actually read it. You're actually helping people. That's the goal of it. You're trying to help the folks that are, in this case, in your church or their friends or broader community. Let's talk a little bit about the impact that the book had. I know it, you know, you guys, you use it as a recall strategy. Just for folks that are listening in, that's, you know, the kind of big idea there is coming out of a big day. Man, but one of the best practices like Christmas is to have some really clear call to action to bring people back. You use this as a part of that for a January recall. Talk us through that from a, you know, an impact point of view. How has it helped the church? Because I know that's, you know, that was a part of the driver for you wanting to do it. It's like, hey, I want to do this to try to help us reach people and help, you know, what we're doing at the fields.
Yeah, absolutely. At, you know, at Christmas, you have your peak attendance. You have a lot of people showing up at Christmas, but then there's the lull of the new, you know, New Year's Eve and that weird mm-hmm. Sunday that no one shows up to church after, after Christmas. And, you know, and we don't even have church that Sunday. And so you're like, so on Christmas, when we have everyone, we're like coming back on, then we gave the specific date. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to get a free copy mm-hmm. of Pastor Travis's new book called Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then we were very specific. If you come back the next weekend, it's for sale in the lobby. Mm. But on this date, everyone's getting a free copy. And so there's a little investment there. But for me, it's like, we're getting the word out into everyone's hands. Mm-hmm. It's a huge callback. It's really a great idea. And so we did that. And, you know, I'm 1 week out going, I don't know if anyone's going to show up to church.
But you said that on a call, like the week before. We happened to be on a call and you were like, you didn't quite, weren't quite that pointed, but you were like, well, we'll see. Who knows? You know, we'll see what happens. Well, the books are here. We've got a big giant pile of books.
Yeah. You have to pre-order these things. You're like, man, are we going to have hundreds of books sitting in the closet? Like, this is a bad idea. I was blown away by that. Our numbers, I don't know if we were 20% higher than on average. And we hit an attendance barrier. I know numbers aren't everything, but it was the first time we broke the 1,000 barrier on a non-holiday.
Yeah, that's huge.
And so here's what's fascinating is, okay, like that's the free book day. And we were like 1,100 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And next week, same number. Wow. Next week, maybe dropped a few families. Yeah, yeah. But to be honest, that whole series and today we're out of that series. We're much higher today than we were before this book launch. And it did create some momentum. And the second thing is anywhere I go in community, I just hear people say, hey, how's your book doing? Mm, so I know you said like, it's great for a callback. It's great for your church. You know, it's good for that series. And that's mm-hmm. absolutely worked. But mm-hmm. then the other key is community credibility.
Right.
And you can be the pastor in town that's an author. You can be the pastor in town that's written mm-hmm. a book. And mm-hmm. and online, you just keep sharing it and people seeing it. And that's a conversation I hear all the time when I'm out at a restaurant or something. It's like, hey, I've been reading your book, or hey, how's it going? Amazing. How's the book going? And so there is community credibility. And now we're going to be able to pass this book out all year long to like whether mm-hmm. we haven't decided if it's new guests or people who graduate mm-hmm. like a leadership program or something, but it's the gift that keeps on giving. You know, we have this tool, mm-hmm. let's continue to use mm-hmm. it. And now we're packaging a 10-week, it's like 10 chapters. So we're packaging like a discussion guides. I have pastor friends who are like, hey, we'd like to do a small group. So I'm leading a small group right now. Mm-hmm. I want to do it myself to see like, what are the right questions in the discussion? So as I'm leading this, I'm writing the curriculum, and it's just a small group discussion, but then we'll be able to even make that available to, you know, some friends in ministry that they want to, you know, take this and run with it.
Yeah.
It's been a huge gift for our church and it's been great.
That's good. Well, that's great, dude. I want to encourage people that are listening in. Well, I want you to go and pick up copies. I'm assuming you can get it on Amazon. Is there somewhere we want to send them to pick up besides that? Or is there any website or that kind of thing we want to send
Amazon's
them to?
The easiest. And then the other one, the tool that we're developing, especially for pastors, because then we'll do discussion guides and even like give links to how I use the series, is just go to readwonderful.com.
Readwonderful.com.
And then here's the you touched on this is like people kind of are afraid to write a book. I ask mm-hmm. myself this all the time, like, what's at stake? I think it's a Don mm-hmm. Miller. Like Don Miller says this when he's storytelling. He says one of the parts of the great story at the end of like of any story is what's at stake. What if we do this, this happens, and if we don't do this, this happens. And what's at stake if I don't deliver practical tools and steps of helping people find fulfillment and satisfaction is mm-hmm. if I don't, the culture will. Mm-hmm. So in my mind is if we don't lead people to true fulfillment and satisfaction, someone's going to try to tell them this is what satisfying is. And this is what fulfillment is. And so I think we ask ourselves of any book topic or any message that we're getting ready to teach or any, you know, big series that a church is getting ready to plan is what's at stake if we don't do this?
So good.
And for me, it's like, I don't want people finding fulfillment in other places because that will be empty fulfillment. And they're going to go right back to the life ache that they had before.
Yeah, love it.
And so what's at stake? Like, what's the cost of not doing this book?
So good. So good, dude. I love it. What encouragement. I just want to honor you for actually doing it and for leaning in. And I think it would be a great, you know, there's multiple things happening in today's podcast here. I think it'd be a great book for, I think there's leaders that are listening in that need to hear the message of this book and would find this as a friends. It's an encouraging book. It's positioned as, you know, Travis is your friend. This is not the kind of book you're going to walk away from feeling crappy about yourself. You're going to be like, okay, no, well, I've got some practical steps empowered to take, you know, steps forward. I think it would be a great resource for your staff team. Like you could be like, hey, let's use this as a resource for us as we're, you know, maybe a training thing this spring or maybe, you know, post Easter or something like that. Hey, let's read through this as a staff team. I think that could be a great place. I think, you know, it's an encouragement to, you know, here's a leader who did the work to write a book. I know there are literally thousands of pastors who are listening in who have thought the same thing. Well, here's like the 1% who actually did it. And you heard about the response, which is amazing. So, you know, maybe it would encourage you to take a step and, you know, or maybe you want to do this as a series at your church, that kind of thing. So go to readwonderful.com. That would be a great, starting point, pick up copies on Amazon. I would really encourage you to lean in with Travis on that. Going to give you the final words. Any final words you'd love to say there, Travis, just as we kind of close out today's episode?
So when Bob Goff wrote his book, Love Does, he put his phone number in the back. Mm-hmm. We were in my office, and myself and our executive pastor, Evan, we called the number. He answered. Bob answers, and we're like, Bob, your book has been so powerful in our life. Just thanks for writing. And in his joyous Bob Goff voice, he goes, Travis, you have a book in you. You know, and he goes, everybody should write a book. You know? So I tried calling the number again to tell him I wrote that book and he didn't answer. But so if I had parting comments, one, I really do believe everyone has a book in them. And then secondly, I want to be as approachable as he is. If anyone has any questions or wants to dive a little deeper, we can get that contact and reach out. I'd love to help and love to just
Where do we want to send people if they want to connect with you? To be at the church website?
Let's go to the church. Let's go to the fields.church.
Yep.
And then that would be the easiest contact.
Perfect. Well, thanks, friends. Thanks for tuning in, Travis. Just want to honor you. You're a great leader. You're the kind of people should follow. And so it's been great to connect with you today. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for tuning in to the Unseminary Podcast. Drop by unseminary.com for more helpful resources for you and your team. There you will find articles, online courses, and so much more. Unseminary, stuff you wish they taught in seminary. Presented by CDF Capital. Visit them at cdf.capital/unseminary.